Good morning, good morning. If I'm too loud, please let me know. I have a big voice and having a mic does not help. Okay. So again, my name is Charlene Gamboa. I am a PhD student at the Rush University with the College of Nursing. My current research focus is how to recruit African Americans into health-related research. So one of the things that I will be speaking on today is the recruitment facilitators and barriers to recruiting African American men. And then I'll be followed by Dr. Sumos, who will talk about the strategies we employ to recruit African American men for our study. So as we know, recruitment is a necessary step of the research process, right? We all know that it's essential. We have to recruit all people, all ages, where they live, regardless of their socioeconomic status. All people are needed for research. But what we also know is it is not an easy task. You know, I hear a lot, and for the 14 years, since I was 14 years old, I've assisted my mom in recruiting African Americans into health-related research. And along the way, what I've consistently heard is African Americans are so challenging to recruit. And I don't know if any of you have heard that. So what I decided to do was, well, let me see if I can give you a little bit of information about why is it so challenging to recruit them. Now, we all know that there are some historical, societal, educational, and economic atrocities that have occurred which contribute to these challenging experiences. Okay? If we think back to how we arrived to this country, slaves were plucked from the field slaves were plucked from the field for medical experimentation. Segregation and civil rights, when we were going to get basic health treatment, we were either given minimal treatment, denied treatment, or treated as guinea pigs. And the most well-known historical atrocity in which we were used as guinea pigs is the Tuskegee Syphilis Study. Okay? So this study started in 1932, went on for 40 plus years, where over 600 African American men were left untreated for syphilis just to see what the progression would look like. That stays with us. Whether we verbally say it or not, it's in our blood. It is a memory that stays with us. And so you fast forward through time a little bit to where we are today, and what have we experienced in the healthcare institution? Okay? We've been discriminated in quality of healthcare services, maltreated, mistreated, and disrespected. Often, as you see in the picture, the gentleman is left alone. You've been given some health information, and you're just left there to sit and ponder. So we've had these unethical research conducted in the past. We've experienced these mistreatments, exploitations. But some way, somehow, it's not acknowledged that that contributes to our hesitation to participate in research. So let's look at what kind of sort of has worked. Some people have used this one recruitment plan fits all kind of outfit, okay? Throw some flyers up, put a number here. Maybe they'll call. Maybe. So what I've learned in my experience from the age of 14 to present and working directly under Dr. Julian is that a one-size-fits-all model does not work. It just doesn't. So what do we have to do? Well, how about we start with the basic? Learn what's important to the people we're recruiting. Sounds basic, right? Simple enough. Well, one of the things you can do is take a step back and think about, if I'm going out to recruit about prostate cancer in the black male, Do I just rush into the community and say, hi, I have this research study. I want to recruit black men to be a part of this prostate cancer study. Do you think they're going to line up and just say, I'll join? Probably not. But if you sit down and you listen to the grassroots organizations, connect with other agencies that's in the community, you might find out that employment is an issue in the community. And one of the things that's something small, but we can do it because it has been done, employ some of the residents that are from that community to be a part of your recruitment team. So then those people can speak the language, sound like them, look like them, but most of all, know the culture and the rules of that community, which would eventually get you in somewhat. Because once you get your foot in the door, you then have to build a relationship of trust. And the way you build that relationship of trust, give first. Continue to give, invest in that community, because once you make that emotional investment, we'll begin that next step. So then I want to take this a little step further. You know, we talked about the African American community. We want to look at the African American male. Do you know in many instances they are not pursued to be a part of research because they're often pushed to the side, relegated to the side with the assumption, well, they're not going to participate anyway. There's no point. Okay? And then you look at it from the African American's male perspective, they're willing to participate. However, if your passive recruitment is only showing something very general that does not look like them, does not use the language or the dialect that they use, that may not be intended for me then. In many instances, they perceive that recruitment is for others and that others are generally their white counterparts or African American females. But it can't be for me. And then the other side is make them aware of participation benefits. Now, don't get that confused with incentives. Those are two different worlds. But most often, we put out there, oh, come and participate. We'll pay you $25. We'll pay you $50. In many instances, that's not what they're looking for. What we learned in the Father Advisory Council is the gentleman truly wanted to create something that was tangible for their community. It was a gap that was needed to be filled, and they wanted to be a part of it. So you got to show them what are the participation benefits. So our study looks at African American fathers. And so I really, really wanted to delve into, well, if you're not looking at the African American men to be participants in research studies, you got to be looking at least for fathers, right? There's a lot of parenting programs that are out here. So you got to want some father involvement, right? So I went and I looked and I looked and I looked. I came across maybe two articles. Maybe. And I say maybe because the other one is kind of, sort of, it was pretty much a systematic review where they pulled a study into it. But the one that I did read that was really impactful, that brought in African American fathers, pointed out that they have similar participation or enrollment issues as the African American population to us. And basically, as a mistrust of research that continues, and we cannot ignore that. And we have to learn to make that emotional investment to get them to buy into enrollment and participation. The other thing we learned was the fathers perceive themselves less important when it comes to participating in these parenting programs. They're all geared towards the mom, right? What do you got? WIC. Women. What is the other one? Dr. Julian wrote a fabulous paper, but it's about maternal and child health. Where's the father in either of those? Two huge programs And often the father's pulled, what? To the side. He's a second thought. So then the other thing that came about was, okay, so now you got to look at the advertisements and the different things that are out there. The recruitment is just not there for the fathers. It's just not there. And again, we go back to them being unaware. Unaware, again, starting from the very beginning. You're not even targeting the fathers when it comes to the parenting programs. So why do I feel the need to be involved? So recruitment. You have passive, which are your flyers and your billboards and your ads. And then you have active, where you're out and you're about and you're hitting the pavement. And one of the things that we learn that works the most is your recruitment plan cannot be one. It has to be flexible. It has to be able to adapt to the community you're going into, to the opportunities that present themselves. And just a quick side note, I love side notes. I watched Dr. Sumo in the middle of me running to her to get help with an assignment to say, hey, Dr. Sumo, I need help with an assignment. She goes, hold on. Sir, may I talk to you about a program real quick? And she got on the elevator with this gentleman, and I just stood in the back of the elevator, and I said, that's called active recruitment. Yes, thank you. And then the advertisements that are out there, again, are not geared towards the fathers. One of the things, and I really, really want to read this verbatim of what a father said. He said, why can't I see as many and as large advertisements of father parenting programs as I do for cigarettes and alcohol in my neighborhood? How profound is that? You want me involved. You want to get my attention. But your advertisement, passive, it's not even as large as the cigarette advertisement. So you really don't want me. It's the perspective that they currently have. So our biggest thing of success has been word of mouth. When you get out there and you build the relationships, you make the emotional investment, and you have that sense of authenticity, guess what? You develop a mouthpiece. And that mouthpiece goes out and say, let me tell you about this program. Let me tell you what I learned. Once you get that investment, your programs will go far and wide. And word of mouth is active recruitment. I'm going to pass this on to Dr. Sumo. Thank you.